Okay, Slave's new album, Axioma Ethica Onini, comes out at the end of September in Europe and North America. Can you tell us a little bit more about the ideas and the concepts behind this release?
Yeah, it's us trying to explore a little bit into the territories of ethics. Put it simple. It's a big topic, but we've been exploring it from two different angles, so to speak. The first part of the title, Axioma, is a word derived from, I guess, science. They use the axioms, which are undisputable truths, you know, things we do agree upon, like the speed of light, gravity, 2 plus 2 is 4, and so on. While the other part of the title, Ethica Odini, is the name of a book written in pre-Christian times in the Nordic countries. It's supposed to be directly handed down from Odin himself, and the title translates to the ethics of Odin. It's, you know, a guide to conduct both in times of peace and war, and so the title symbolizes that sort of inquiry or exploration into the whole concept of, you know, ethics as a balancing act between chaotic and orderly forces.
And what do you guys decide, I mean, pick this subject? What's the personal interest that you guys have in it?
It's just something you stumble upon all the time when you know, work with both mythology and philosophy and all these things, which are basically, you know, the human search for right and wrong and finding truth, I guess, is seems to be embedded in most of us, at least, some interest in finding out what is right and wrong, especially, I guess, in people who like to go a little bit outside the box. You know, you don't accept everything at face value. It's not necessarily so that this and this is right or wrong just because it says so in the Bible or a Quran or Torah or whatever, or because it says so in a newspaper or by the president or whatever. And therefore, you throw yourself out on in unknown waters. So if you sort of course, you can just deny every kind of truth and be a nihilist, but also there's another way, and that's trying to figure out things for yourself. And that's, of course, not that easy. It's quite easy to just refuse truth, but to try and find new ones, it's always a challenge. So yeah, that's we end up in those questions all the time, working with mythology and history and things like that.
And I mean, you guys also spend quite a few time in the cover, and you also have usually have symbolism and different things behind the cover. Can you tell us a little bit more about the cover of this album?
Yeah, we want to leave it as open as possible for interpretation, for people to see, do they read the lyrics or listen to the music. So, of course, there's some pretty evident symbolism going on there. The circle is a quite traditional symbol from many mythologies, both for, you know, as a border, as a thing that divides order and chaos. It's a pretty potent symbol for Odin, which is also in the title. So for me, at least, it represents sort of a struggle between order and chaos. Order symbolized through this, you know, man figure, and the chaos forces outside, which are more abstract. And I think it's pretty exciting the way he's painted it, because it's not, you know, it changes from time to time if these chaotic forces are sort of like threatening, moving inwards into the picture towards the order, or it's going the other way outwards, you know, what's coming from where. So I think it's sufficiently abstract, like I would want it to be.
And going a little bit into the musical side, do you guys keep evolving with each album? The sound keeps getting richer, it keeps getting more refined. Can you tell us a little bit more about what were you shooting when you were composing the songs?
Yeah, I said, you know, we listen to a pretty schizophrenic mix of music all the time. Contemporary metal or extreme metal or 70s, and then Gritler will discover some weird Turkish prog and show that to us. So there's always a lot of things going on. But I would say that this time, particularly the classics from the early 90s, was pretty much present. I started, you know, getting some of the stuff I was writing at the beginning of the writing process reminded me a little bit of you know, the great bands that were the foundation for what became like the second wave of black metal and extreme metal, like Master's Hammer from Czech, or Morbid Angel, Autopsy, these American bands that were so influential to the Norwegian movement. And I started like feeling sort of an urge to listen to music that would grasp me in that way that it did in the 90s. And I had a little bit of a hard time finding that, because so much of new music is sort of referencing either, you know, old stuff, or being so cut off from any tradition, being so technical and you know, sports-like, that it kind of gets all the atmospheric concept. So yeah, I actually went around and shopped quite a lot of like reissued vinyls and stuff from these old classics. I would say, like, not exactly the Norwegian black metal bands, but the bands that inspired them were definitely a big thing for me this time.
And how do you guys think that you can find the perfect balance between the harsh, you know, quick, brutal aspect of the music with the melody and the more approachable sound that the band has since a few albums ago?
Yeah, it just has to happen natural. We try to be we have to be careful with that. Of course, it's really cool when you can reach some new people, as long as it's on our own premises, which I feel it is. That can be cool, but we have to, you know, pay attention to our own sort of ambitions, that we don't get tempted to sort of, if we notice that certain things, melodic things or whatever, really hit, you know, hits home with a bigger audience, then we have to be sort of aware that we don't put too much of it in, because that is sort of, now I think that Enslaved is interesting because it's genuine, and it's mixing these extreme elements with some more understandable or approachable, as we say, elements. But I think the day that people get a sense that we're, you know, trying to sugarcoat ourselves, then they're going to lose that interest. So I think we just have to continue exactly what we're doing, and that's playing music straight from the heart.
And for example, I mean, you guys have like really changed since the early days. What are your thoughts when people say, "Oh no, they went soft," even though, I mean, it's still heavy and it's still pretty heavy, but you know, it doesn't sound raw. It doesn't sound, you know, like the early 90s.
Yeah, it's, you know, what can you do? I think if we talk to people, it happens, you know, they're following Slade from the beginning and then they sort of lose interest. Then what we do is, like, of course, we're grateful that they did spend time listening to Enslaved at all, and they should stick to their guns. You know, if it feels right to listen to the first 2-3 albums, that's fine. I like those albums myself too a lot, and I think they should do the same as we do, you know, and be true to yourself and stick to the principles. If that newer sound is too polished or lacks the rawness, then they should go ahead and find other bands. But you know, it needs to be on that level. It needs to be, because it, on an emotional level or musical level, if people stop liking things just because it doesn't sound like 1992, then it sort of, the argument sort of dissolves itself, because obviously it isn't 1992. Everything's changed in the world and in the bands and in the people listening to, you know, it's different conditions, so it's not going to happen again. It's sort of, you know, that whole obsessive revivalist thing is just going to cause pain and loneliness for those guys.
And how do you see that the band will keep evolving, since in the last few years, it's been constantly changing a little bit by a little bit, but it's still, you know, where do you feel that this is going to lead to?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think we're going to continue. I think the next few albums are going to be in this vein. Of course, I'm going to have to eat those words at some point. I'm always wrong when I try to make predictions about what's going on with Enslaved in the future, but that is my feeling. I think we went quite far into mellow territories with Vertebrae, and I think that gave us sort of a sense of, okay, that we're getting pretty close to like the outer edge of how soft Enslaved can go before it's not Enslaved anymore. Perfect. And we have quite a lot, you know, there's quite a bit of distance to the other extreme of Enslaved, the aggression that I think is part of the new album also. So there's just such a vast space to explore. It's not going to be pop or female fronted goth metal, at least. It's not going to be electronica. It is going to be that weird Enslaved mix of old and new, I think.
And whenever you guys write, how long do you think it's taking longer now to write songs, since you have to polish them a little bit more? Or you think that it's easier since you guys are doing it for so long?
It sort of evens itself out. I would say that the writing process is maybe much the same, because, you know, an idea is an idea, and even though I get a little bit, you know, have more technical skills, so we can write stuff that's more complex, it's still the same, I guess. What we do is perhaps pay more attention in the rehearsal room, not in terms of, like, perfecting and rehearsing like really difficult technical stuff, but more working on transitions, because our music is going more towards the dynamic kind of songwriting. So we want to go from very quiet to, you know, very loud, and go back and forth and find the middle road and all that stuff. And that requires quite a few run throughs just to sort of get a feeling with each other, because everybody has to do crescendos and descendos in sort of a similar fashion to get that feeling to it. So yeah, it's maybe it's ironic, but and I think it's a good time. It just requires more rehearsing with the years. I read sometimes the band says that we don't rehearse anymore because now we've been playing together for such a long time. And I think that's a giant red lamp blinking in the corner there. It's like, alarm, alarm, we need to rethink the whole thing.
And whenever you guys write songs, do you think of how you're going to make them, come live in a live setting, or you just don't mind how much production you put behind them and then try to figure out the live thing?
Actually, that gets sorted in a sense, because we worked so much with the arrangements before entering the studio. So we have to start kind of solve it in the rehearsal room. We never make the kind of decision where we say, okay, it sounds like shit, but let's fix it in the studio. We have to find an acceptable solution in the rehearsal room, and then we'll maybe, you know, agree to play around with it in the studio, expand it, and have 4 guitar layers instead of 2 in the studio. But it's all solved. So I guess by the time we enter the studio, we already have sort of the live version, and then things can happen in the studio, so we go back and do small alterations to the live version. But that's the way we make the songs. They're like made for a live setting first, and then adapted to the studio.
And talking about the live thing, you guys are gonna start touring in Europe with Demon Borgir, and you're also coming to America. Can you tell us a little bit more about how this package got built into, and what are your expectations for this next tour?
Yeah, we got approached by Demon Borgir, who wanted us to take part on both the European and the US tour. I doubt it, because they're so heavily influenced by Enslaved, because, you know, it's very two very different things. But
yeah,
we've been existing in parallel for so long, you know. I think they started their band quite soon after we started doing stuff, and of course everybody in Norway know them quite well. They're the first band to become like really professional in a music business way from Norway. Always had great admiration for them, because they set their goals and reached them. So I think the main reason is, you know, they wanted a quality band to go with them to offer, you know, some give their fans some value for the money. And also, I think there's simply because we've known them for such a long time, we always have a great time with those guys. And if you're to tour for 8 to 9 weeks consecutive, why not bring along some people you want to hang out with?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, since last time you guys were here, what are you expecting this time with this album, and how do you think it's going to change from last time you toured the U.S.?
I think we're going to have even more people being aware of Enslaved, because the last time we toured, a few tours before that again, we did some headlining shows that, you know, kept bringing back a bigger and bigger audience, and now at the Opeth tour last year, we really met a lot of people that heard about Enslaved. We met people who were like totally in shock because they thought from what they read or heard or whatever that Enslaved was a lo-fi kind of like black metal revivalist from the 90s, and they were pretty much in shock. And a lot of people wrote this afterwards and had gone and bought like all 10 albums in one big chunk. And we're really getting into it. So I think we're going to meet a lot of those people again. And also, I think some of the Dimmu fans are going to actually, from seeing Enslaved in the live setting, they're going to realize that it might look different and might have, you know, this sort of experimental tag to it. But it is very intense. It is very catchy in a live situation. So I think we're going to convince a few of those too. So that's the feeling we've had since 2004, when we started working really seriously with North America. It just keeps getting better for every time.
And are you guys bringing your projector stuff? Are you reworking it for this album?
We're working with some different ideas for a new album. I think we're going to move a little bit away from the projection stuff again. When we started doing that in 2003, we were quite influenced by bands like Neurosis, these post-metal bands that had been working their projection into the shows. And it was quite a rare thing in the extreme metal scene. But now you go around festivals, you see more and more of the bands bringing the projection into the show. So now it's become sort of a little bit of
standard thing.
A standard thing, and then it's not for Enslaved anymore. I think we're going to explore more into the static elements again of the live setting, some decorations and some art on stage to give it some depth. It is still, you know, we can do with and without any props. It's still about, you know, the energy. The good thing about touring with Dimmu Borgir is that they're really a confident band and a band that has respect for other bands. No matter the sales, so we are basically can do it exactly what we want on stage. There's no limitations. So we're gonna be thinking a little bit about that for the next few weeks.
And personally, what kind of musical influences? You say you pick out, you know, different stuff, and everybody in the band brings their own. But you personally, where do you keep listening to newer bands, or you just stay with the older, better for some people stuff?
I think I'm a mix between like the extreme, like the Gilflower singer. He says as a joke that he doesn't listen to stuff that dates after 1975. That's kind of, you know, him making a joke, but it's a little bit true also. He's very skeptical towards new music. But I'm somewhere in between. I like music from all eras. I like, you know, I'm the kind of guy who would like the new albums from Iron Maiden. I think they're great, even though they're different.
Yeah.
So I try to stay updated. I listen to new stuff in the black metal scene, like Isan. His new album is great. Still try to keep a little bit updated with the death metal scene, totally into bands like Immolation, Suffocation, and those guys. There's just so much stuff going on, and I try to keep a little bit updated. As I said, I have no principles. I don't care if it's new or different from demo days. If it sounds good to me, it sounds good.
And overall, what are you guys' expectations with this new album? Do you think you want to surpass what you did with the previous stuff, or where do you sit on this?
My expectation, my hopes, sort of, you know, in terms of the outside world, is I really hope seeing the expectations people have for the new Enslaved album, which for me implies, you know, a huge amount of actually confidence and trust. People trust Enslaved to deliver high quality albums and to deliver something new that they can sort of sink their teeth into and think a little bit about. I hope we can deliver on that, and I'm pretty confident we are doing that. And also, I think we're going to take a little step up when it comes to the whole live thing, the live production. That's really important for us. Both but now, supporting Dimmuborgir, and I guess in 2011, where we'll be doing more of our own headlining shows. So I think it's going to be, I know it's a step forward, but I have a hope that it's a major one.
And how are you, for example, since you're the supporting band, like you mentioned, you have a shorter set list. How do you guys conceptualize and want to, you know, put together a good set list that includes what people like and it also allows you to promote the new album?
Yeah, we have to be honest there when we do the live set. It's tempting to do one or the other, but that we have to balance, we have to present the new album. We have to, like, give something back to all those who get into it, to buy it, to come to the show, to check it out live. At the same time, there's also going to be quite a few people there who know the Enslaved catalog. So we need to make room for some oldies. And then there's the whole dilemma of Enslaved, that we have 10 albums and all the songs are really long, so how do we figure that out in 45 minutes, you know? But we tend to actually to find quite a good balance between things. And also we tour quite a lot, which I think we can do because we have such a big catalog. So the people who go to the show this year, they can go and see us maybe, you know, 6-9 months later on the new North American tour. We're headlining, doing a longer set, and present other songs from the new album as well as include songs from albums we didn't have time for on the Dimmu tour.
And in overall, and what do you think that the importance of, you know, making it well in North America, since we've seen that many bands try to tour here, a lot of bands get 3 people a night, a lot of other bands get a couple hundred. What are your what do you think it makes a difference?
Yeah, I think North America is important for basically for every metal band, because metal is so global in a sense. And the way that the whole thing's developing right now, you have to sort of make a broad effort. I think North America is, in one way, an advantage for Enslaved, the way that people relate to music in North America, maybe opposed to Central Europe or something, where they're more conservative. In the U.S., if you do something slightly different with your music, or like fusion, different genres and so on, it's seen as not a disadvantage, but rather maybe making the band more interesting. As opposed to, let's say, Germany, where you need to spend more time convincing people that there's nothing wrong with the music, even though it's a bit unusual. So, yeah, for us, North America is, of course, technically it's a big place, so, you know, if you get the big audience there, you have a big audience, but also on a more, let's say, personal, on a level of personal satisfaction, it feels really good to, you know, it is the home of modern rock and roll and all that stuff, so it feels sort of, I think it will always be a thing for European bands, a big goal to sort of have some success in America.
And just to close it off, is there anything else that you want to add for the North American audience that will most likely be attending your shows with the Dimmu tour and future shows as you guys as headliners?
Yeah, I just want to thank them so much for, you know, supporting the bands as intensely as they've been doing the last years, coming to the shows and buying the albums. It means really a lot for us. It's really inspiring, and we hope that the people who come to the Dimmu shows will get inspired by that and go see us again the next time, because we will keep coming back for a long time.